Number one, this is a podcast for small to medium businesses. We're going to talk marketing, hiring, leadership, human resources, taxes, operations, everything you need to run your business better. Number two, the experts you hear on this show are going to give you easy to understand tips that you can put in place quickly. Number three, every day you gotta laugh. Life is too short to take it seriously all the time. This is 3 for 3. Let's go. Hey everyone, this is Kurt Glidden back here with another episode of 3 for 3. I'm here today with Jay Mellon, who's the co-founder and CEO of AtNet Plus, which is located in Stowe, Ohio. AtNet Plus helps small and mid-sized businesses solve their IT pains and has been at it for more than 2 decades. Jay's company became an early leader in the IT managed service space and continues to stay ahead of the trends and topics in this ever-changing field. In addition to being a small business owner, Jay also prides himself on being an educator, particularly in the community, and he also frequently provides seminars around proactive IT management and cybersecurity planning. And Jay was born in Bismarck, North Dakota, and attended North Dakota State University, where he studied construction management. I'm interested to hear some of the ties between that and what he does now. But he started his career working for IBM Global Services out of their Minneapolis office. IBM eventually sent him to Akron to work on the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company account. Everyone in Akron seems to have some connection with Goodyear one way or another, and that's Jay's. He started AtNet Plus in 1998 with Jim Labor, and the company has now grown. And Jay, tell me how many people you employ now.
Yeah, so we've got now about 31 here in the U.S., and then we've got 5 software developers in South America.
That's awesome. That's impressive to have some extra exposure like that. But Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So before we get into this here, as I was looking over your history of the company, I've got 2 questions for you. One, so you started an IT company in 1998. How big a factor was Y2K? Everyone talked about it right about then. How big a factor was that when you started this venture?
You know, it was on the news. Everybody was talking about it. You know, fortunately for us, it mostly affected software development. So, you know, from a network and IT management perspective, other than just making sure that the software was up to date and was patched for the bug, luckily we weren't too impacted by it. But I do remember that time. There was a flurry of activity. It was on everybody's mind. And then, of course, as we all know, it ended up being really non-consequential, which I think fortunately worked out for everybody.
Were you among the folks that come January 1st at the ringing of the bell, holding your breath to make sure everything was okay?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big relief. I mean, obviously, you know, everybody was predicting doom and gloom and airplanes falling out of the skies and everything. So, you know, obviously, we knew pretty quickly that nothing had happened. And from there on, it was easy sailing.
It was almost like a big joke at the time. I mean, there was half the people that were really worried about this. And I think particularly on the business front here. But it was a joke of a lot of Tonight Show kind of things here and there. And fortunately, we're on the good side of that.
Exactly.
I should have come up with Y2K jokes. I don't know why I didn't do that. Next time you're on the show, I'm doing Y2K jokes just for you, Jay.
That sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. My other question before we get into some of the details of your expertise is, do you still carry any kind of North Dakota accent?
Oh, boy. Yeah, you betcha. I do sometimes. You get back with your friends and your family, and it kind of sneaks up on you, but I try not to admit it. It's a little embarrassing at times, but yes, sometimes.
I've known Jay for several years now, and I would not have guessed that you were from the North Dakota area, and I have a little bit of experience from the Fargo-Moorhead area myself in that neck of the woods. I think it's one of the best accents out there, Jay, so I say let it fly.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll have to remember that.
All right. So today, what we want to talk about, we want to get some information, some tips from you, Jay, about cybersecurity topics that really relate to every small to medium-sized business. I think today's era, I mean, it impacts everyone out there. You can't think of a business, any kind of entity, that does not have to deal with this, particularly as it comes to protection of data, as it comes to protecting, you know, your clients' data, any kind of security risks that may be out there that could expose lots of problems. We've heard this story over and over again. Even major companies where they're losing passwords and accounts and so on. And so this is, I think I'm really excited to see what you have to say today, Jay, and get some topics and some tips from you on this. So let's jump into this. What's your first tip when it comes to this topic?
Yeah, I think really the first thing that we like to talk to people about is just this idea around education and awareness. And what we mean by that, first of all, is, you know, when we first started talking to small to mid-sized businesses about cybersecurity several years ago, the response we would get from people was, well, yeah, you know, I understand that's probably important, but, you know, we're a small company and we don't really have anything that the bad guys would be interested in. And I just don't think that it's a big threat for us. Well, obviously times have changed. And if anybody's paying attention to the news, they now see that small businesses are at risk, that they are in fact a target, largely because the attackers know that a lot of small businesses don't invest in cybersecurity the way that maybe they should. And so I think, you know, part of our objective is to get out there and help people understand what that risk is. I think the other part of that education and awareness component is really helping businesses train and educate their users and employees on what safe cybersecurity practices are. And so that would be everything from, you know, proper password hygiene. You know, you've probably heard it before where, you know, make sure that you don't use the same password for more than one system, because if a password is compromised on one, they can get into all of it. Make sure your passwords are complex. Make sure you're changing them. You know, some of the rules seem to be evolving on that a little bit, but the idea still is make sure that you're thinking about your passwords and you're managing them properly. And unfortunately, we still see a lot of end users that just either don't understand how important it is or really don't understand the best way to do it. Another area in the education space is really helping users understand the threat of phishing messages. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with the concept of phishing. If you are, you've probably seen them before, where somebody sends you an email message and it might be pretending to be from UPS or maybe from Amazon or somebody trying to compel you to click on something. And then what happens is when you click on it, it oftentimes will install software or it'll try to compromise your credentials, or, you know, sometimes it can lead to ransomware and a number of bad things. And it's very, very difficult now for a lot of users to be able to tell the difference between a phishing message and a real message. And what we found is through some very easy education and simple tips, you can actually pretty significantly reduce your chances of falling for those if you just know what to look for. So we really recommend taking the time to educate end users on how to do that. Obviously for our clients, that's training that's built into the services we deliver for them. But then the other thing that we encourage you to do is periodically test those users. So what we do with our clients is we send them fake phishing messages every now and then. And we test to see who falls for it and who doesn't. And for the people that fall for it, you know, we're not trying to shame them or embarrass them. It's an opportunity to show them a little bit more education and help them really understand how to minimize their threats. And what I think is kind of funny about this, I'll go into a very brief story here, is it really, I think, illustrates how big this problem is when we first started rolling out our phishing testing to our clients, I would sometimes get a call or an email from the CEO or another executive at the client organization saying, hey, you know, Jay, I know you guys are doing this phishing testing and it's really cool that you're doing this, but it's just too much. It's got to stop. You're just, you know, these messages are distracting our employees and they can't get any work done and it's just too much. So just, you know, turn it off. And my response would always be, wow, that's really interesting. Can you tell me how many messages you're getting? And they'd sometimes say, well, you know, we're getting sometimes, you know, each person is getting three or four of these a day and it's just too much. And I would respond and say, well, actually, we're only sending one message per user every 2 weeks. Mm. So if you're getting that many a day, it turns out that those are probably real ones and not our tests. And in fact, if you didn't start noticing them until we started sending our testing, then in fact, the testing is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It's actually raising awareness. People are actually catching it now. And why that's important is all it takes is one of those messages to slip through the cracks and for somebody to click on it. And the next thing you know, you've got ransomware installed in your network and, you know, somebody's asking you to pay $200,000 in Bitcoin, you know, to get your files back or to get operational again.
Yeah.
So, you know, anything we can do to, reduce the chances of that one message slipping through, I think is worth it. So, and what I love about the whole education component for most of our clients is it's easy to do and it's not super expensive. So I think that's kind of the first tip I would lead with is let's have a security conversation. Let's talk about it. Let's make sure that we acknowledge that it's a real thing that businesses need to think about.
So basically what you were saying here is that there's so much importance in what you're doing in protection that comes down to prevention more than
yeah.
You stop before. I mean, a lot of us, I think as business owners, we think about something like spam filtering and different tools like that. But the I think what you're saying is that the human element here, just being smart about it, is a much bigger factor these days.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We spend a lot of focus and time on all the different products and services you should buy. And believe me, I think they're all great products and services and everybody should buy them, of course. But the reality is, if your budget is limited and you're only able to do a few things, I really think education of your users is probably the best bang for your buck. Absolutely. And like you said, it's preventative.
One other follow-up question on this, Jay, and that is there enough information out there that for folks out there that don't have an AtNet Plus that they can count on to guide them in the right education or guide them to find the right tools and tricks for education to be able to trust what's out there? If you want to dip your toes in the water, can you trust a Google search to educate you the right way? Or do you really need some help from a professional?
You know, that's an excellent point. So, you know, I do think that there are reliable resources out there. I think the challenge is making sure that you find ones, like you said, you can trust. I mean, frankly, one of the latest tactics a lot of these attackers are starting to employ is they're actually using traditional search engine optimization methods in order to increase the visibility of some of these websites that they use as part of their attacks. So, for example, one of the common scams is they'll use SEO tactics to increase the ranking of their fake web page that might be disclosing a phone number for a support for an organization like an airline or other customer support in order to try to get you to call their fake phone number instead of the real phone number. And so they know that people are just going to do a very loose search on Google for that. Whatever number comes up first, they might call, not even necessarily validating that it's actually the real company. So, I don't think it's far-fetched to think that maybe an attacker at some point might try to make false information come up higher in a search engine result in order to lead people to do something dangerous instead of safe. So, it's out there. The information's out there. And certainly organizations like ours can happily point people in the right direction if they're interested, but definitely proceed with caution and be careful what you click on.
And I think they've gotten so much smarter, particularly in the most recent years. You know, there's the one that people would, I think, became a joke with the Nigerian king that has a trust fund of $20 million and you're an inheritance of it.
You know, right.
I think people saw through that pretty quickly. Hopefully most people did. But it is now getting really tough. And I agree with you. I mean, I think of myself as a pretty smart consumer, but there's times when I'm looking at some of these messages and I've heard the horror stories, like you mentioned, that people get caught and this is not people that are not smart. You know, it's good people that are looking at details and not always easy. Okay, well, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it's big business now and they make a lot of money on it. So they've had to become sophisticated. And because they have, they're able to steal a lot of money from people.
It's really sad that it has become big business. All right, so tip number one is education. What's number two?
So, you know, number two is really making sure that you're just following best practices. And I know for a lot of people not in the IT field, that's probably not going to be familiar to them. So I think, you know, maybe what we can do is help them understand a little bit about what those best practices look like. So really what it comes down to is properly managing and maintaining your IT environment. And just like you would change the oil in your car and rotate the tires and do normal maintenance, you really need to do similar things like that with your technology as well. So, you know, that includes things like, you know, monitoring to see what's happening, not only to see whether or not your systems are up and running, but now there's actually really sophisticated technology that can monitor what's happening from a security perspective and actually watch behaviors. And when behaviors are occurring that aren't normal, alert on it. So a great example of that might be, let's say that the person who normally interacts with your financial software, you know, they're in there every day working on it, and they do it from their office in your building. And then all of a sudden, somebody's connecting into your financial software from an unknown address overseas. Well, and they're doing it in the middle of the night, and they're going through a lot of records rapidly. Well, that's a behavior that's not typical for what the normal day-to-day activity is. So there's now systems out there that can detect that type of behavior and alert on it. So having kind of eyes on the network and using different systems in order to watch what's going on. Another thing that I mentioned earlier, but that's part of the day-to-day management, is good password hygiene. You know, I can't stress enough, you know, those points that I covered earlier about making sure they're complex, not reusing them, and so on. Another thing that's very, very easy for people to do, it doesn't have to cost much money, if anything at all, is keeping your software up to date and patched. You know, I know we all have budgets to mind too, and we can't always necessarily go out there and buy the latest greatest version of the software every time a new one comes out. But at least making sure that you're operating software that's still supported by the manufacturer and is receiving updates. And then applying those updates. When we look at a lot of the compromises that come in through methods other than phishing, probably the next most common source is a system that was compromised because it wasn't up to date on its patches. And it doesn't take a lot of time, and it doesn't have to cost a lot of money to keep those patches up to date. And that goes beyond just Windows. Of course, Windows patches is important, or if you're on a Mac, the Mac OS patches. But obviously, Office and any other programs you use, just make sure you're running those patches. And then lastly is lifecycle management. Again, I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier with the software, but just making sure that all of your IT assets are supported by the manufacturer. So that would include your things like your firewalls, your switches, your servers, your computers, your mobile phones. If you're running one of those devices and it's more than 5 or 6 years old, it's more than likely no longer supported by the manufacturer. And the reason that's important, just aside from the whole warranty repair question, which is important, but that's really more about uptime. The reason it's important from a cybersecurity perspective is when your device is no longer supported by the manufacturer, then they're no longer issuing firmware updates and other patches for that hardware. And again, you know, you could, let's say you're running a firewall that's 10 years old. Well, odds are that manufacturer is no longer patching that firewall against the latest threats. And what happens then is the bad guys out there, they know what vulnerabilities exist. Many times they can very easily determine remotely what you're running, sometimes even what version you're running, and then they know exactly what vulnerabilities to exploit to get access. So just, you know, planning ahead and managing that life cycle not only will keep you more secure, but from a budgeting perspective, really allows you to better plan and anticipate what your IT spending is going to look like as well. So there's just a lot of benefits to looking at lifecycle management.
So I've got a great area question for you, Jay, that relates to this. And, you know, from a business perspective, businesses are going to buy the computer, the phones, let's say the desktop phones for their employees. Mm-hmm. But then you get into areas like cell phones. And yeah. I think a lot of companies are expecting that if you are managing any kind of communication with clients, that you're have access to that via a cell phone, maybe other devices. Should companies be controlling, buying those devices for their employees, anything that is going to have any kind of sensitive data, any kind of communication with clients?
Yeah, so that question comes up a lot, and it's not an easy answer. And part of it just kind of depends on your company culture, kind of your philosophy. The trend that you're describing is something we call in our industry BYOD, or bring your own device. And basically what that means is, instead of the company buying that computing asset, they're expecting the employee to provide it. And sometimes there might be a stipend available to kind of reimburse them. Other times it's just part of the job. And what companies need to consider, aside from just the cost aspect of it, is what management, you know, control and insight do they have into that device. So let's just use a cell phone as an example, because that's the most common one. Let's say that a person goes to work for an organization, and they say, you know what, I don't want to carry two cell phones. I'm just going to use my personal cell phone, and I'll use that to connect to the company email. I'll use that to connect to the company CRM. Whatever other software now is being managed via the cloud on mobile devices, I'm just going to use on my smartphone. Well, the problem is, what happens then if that user's device is stolen or lost or compromised? What ability does the company have to then protect their data on that device? Now, in some cases, they might have the ability to remotely wipe it if you've permitted email access on the device. But then what happens when you tell the IT person in your organization that you lost your cell phone, you left it in the back of a cab, let's say, and so they immediately go and wipe your phone, and then, you know, 20 minutes later, the cab driver returns your phone, and not only has your phone been wiped to protect all your email, all of your text messages, all of your personal photos, all of the things that were not company related were also wiped. That gets to be a bit of a sticky situation. So there are things that can be done. One of those is deploying a technology called mobile device management, or, because we're IT people, we use the acronym MDM, because we love to shorten things. But mobile device management, or MDM, is a technology that we can install in these mobile devices that allows us to kind of wall off the work side of the device from the personal side of the device. And so what that means then is, in the event that something happens to the device, we can secure all the company assets on it without really touching the personal stuff. And that also works out nicely if you have an employee leave unexpectedly. All of a sudden now they've got a copy of a lot of your data on their device. And as a company, you might not have control over that unless you've deployed some sort of technology like MDM. So definitely bring your own device has added a new wrinkle to the situation, but we do have technology and techniques we can deploy to address it.
And this topic's not going anywhere, as we have more and more smart devices that can capture this kind of information beyond mobile devices. But right. This mobile device management that you mentioned, MDM, I think that's a great idea for people that don't necessarily buy everything for their employees, but say, let's make sure we have some sort of control over this. And I would imagine, and this is probably common sense to you, is just to have a policy in your handbook that says how you deal with these kind of things as an employee.
Absolutely.
Okay, so great. There was several good, as you say, best practices in that tip there. So let's wrap it up to number three. What you got?
So the third one is just making sure that somebody has ownership of your security posture in your organization. And so what that looks like for a lot of organizations, especially big organizations, is you're now starting to see a new C-level position called the CISO, or Chief Information Security Officer, or Chief Security Officer, depending on how broad the scope is. And essentially, that is an executive role where that person is responsible for making sure that the security practices for the organization are not only defined and appropriate, but they're actually practiced regularly, and they're maintained, and somebody's actually validating that they're happening. Unfortunately, a lot of people think of security as more of a moment in time. So, for example, they'll bring in a company to do a security assessment, and that assessment will happen on July 1st, and they'll say, great, we had this assessment done on July 1st, we're secure. But the reality is, while they might have been secure on July 1st, on July 2nd, something probably changed. Information technology is constantly evolving, constantly changing. And the reality is, you've got people involved too. And anytime you have people involved, that's an unknown variable. So the reality is, security needs to be an ongoing practice. It can't be just a moment in time. And so that requires somebody to have a responsibility for thinking about it and administering it. Now, the challenge you run into is the CISO position is typically a pretty highly compensated position. It's very much in demand right now for people with that skill set. And frankly, a lot of our clients, small to mid-sized businesses, just can't justify the expense of having somebody in that CISO role full-time. And in some organizations, it might even be mandated depending on what your regulatory requirements are. So we're seeing a real big trend in our industry now moving to this virtual CISO or VCISO, virtual chief information security officer, where you're basically able to get all the benefits of having somebody in that role, but you're doing it in a fractional capacity. You're basically outsourcing it, meaning you need to have somebody doing it, but maybe they don't need to be doing it 40 hours a week. Because maybe there's just not enough load there to justify that, but you still need somebody thinking about it. So one of the things that we really encourage people to do is whether you do it through, you know, getting a VCISO involved or even just making sure that somebody in your organization is carrying the torch for security, that somebody does that. And that sometimes can be the business owner. Obviously, you want to make sure whoever's doing it, if they don't have that skill set themselves, that they have resources that they can tap into with the right skill sets, because like I said earlier, just like all the rest of IT, cybersecurity is probably changing even more rapidly. And so it can be very challenging to stay up to speed on it. And just making sure that, whoever's in charge of that is, monitoring all the security protocols, that they're creating processes and documentation. And then also that they work on something called an incident response plan. That's the other thing that we see a really, really big gap on, is a lot of organizations have not created an incident response plan. And basically, that means that you know what's going to happen if there's a breach. The time to start thinking about what to do is not after the breach has happened. Time is of the essence. You have to move quickly. You might have disclosure requirements, depending on what regulatory bodies are involved. You might have a number of other requirements for insurance or other things. And that's a very complicated world to navigate, especially when you're under the stress of having had a breach or some other sort of incident. So having somebody who can actually manage, create that incident response plan and manage it and test it is pretty critical. And again, a lot of small businesses think, well, that sounds like a lot. That really shouldn't apply to us. But unfortunately, if they don't, the process of recovering from a breach might be so difficult that, some businesses just don't even recover from it.
Well, it's kind of like the common sense of changing batteries in your smoke detector, isn't it? You don't want to be doing this when there's a fire in your house. You need to be thinking of this way ahead of time.
You hit it. That's way too late to be checking your batteries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see this with a lot of our clients, and the we've designed a website for them. And, of course, we're dealing with the same kind of issues with website security.
Right.
Passwords that can be spammers, you name it. And it kind of blows my mind how many times we're the stopgap of a piece of information that can control the entire website. You're seeing it from a lot of different perspectives, whether it's networks or other security implements on it. But tell me, I had one question as you were talking about here. Do you think it's critical for any size company to have at least two people involved in that role? So if you're hiring someone, you're assuming that they're going to be doing that on their own. But we always got situations where, all right, so if Joe is in charge of your security information, and Joe's in the hospital, head surgery, and that's, of course, when something gets attacked or goes down or what have you, should there be a backup plan?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it never hurts to have redundancy in place and having more than one person involved. I mean, certainly, even if you've only got one person responsible for managing the security protocols, you definitely want more than one person kind of aware of what's going on. And that might not even necessarily need to be another employee in your organization. It can be an organization, a managed services provider like Atnet Plus or somebody else that is a partner that kind of serves as that backup for that person in-house. I mean, we have clients that have no IT staff in-house and we are everything. We have other clients that have, a core team internally that are very competent and where there is kind of a safety net in case, you know, that very thing you just described happens. So I think it probably is prudent to at least think about, okay, if something should happen to this individual, what's my backup plan?
Yeah, good planning, good thinking. That leads to good security here.
Exactly. Okay,
well, Jay, thank you. I think those are great tips. I'm not going to recap because there was a lot of information there, but if you're listening to the show here, hopefully you got some notes on that. We're going to have some show notes on the website, so check those out as well as any links that Jay might have as far as getting good resources. And I think that's a good thing for education as well. Okay. Hey, one last question before we get to a few jokes here, Jay, and that is if our listeners want to learn more about you or connect with your business, what's the best way people do that?
Absolutely. Well, of course, check out our website. Our website is www.atnetplus.com. That's spelled ATNETPLUS.com. And there's a number of ways to engage with us. And, you know, if we love talking about technology. We have events going on all the time, doing education and outreach. Also, if somebody just wants to get together and grab a cup of coffee and talk tech, we love to do that as well. So we just encourage people to reach out, and we'd love to hear their thoughts.
Hey, sounds great. So you're a tech guy, Jay. Do you like good jokes?
Yes, I do.
Do you like bad jokes?
Surprisingly, I do. I've been known for a number of bad jokes, unfortunately.
I know you're a father as well, so I'm sure you've got a few good dad jokes up your sleeve, and I've got a few as well. And so my goal here is try to get you laugh at one of these jokes. They are terrible, as always. And your goal is to keep a straight face. And I can tell you, Jay, I've only had one person do this successfully. Let's see if you're number two. But before we get into that, how about a little wager? Do you like craft beer by chance?
I do.
How about a wager of, I get you to laugh. You send me one of your, maybe a six pack of your favorite craft beer and you keep a straight face and I'll send you one of my favorites.
Deal.
Got it. All right. Okay, well, three for three. You gave us our three tips. I'm going to give you three jokes here. I'm a writer. I like good writing jokes. And here's one for you about grammatical use, and that is, why should you never date an apostrophe?
I don't know. Why not?
No, they're too possessive.
That's interesting. I'm smiling, but no. Sorry.
I'm warming you up here, Jay. Well, did you hear the poem about digging?
I did not.
Well, it wasn't very good, but it was deep.
Okay, well, that's getting better. That's getting better, yes. So
thank you.
Moving in the right direction.
This is like a golf clap, I feel like. Thanks for coming out. Very polite of you. Well, then one more question, and that is – Do you like the Marvel series, the MCU? Do you follow the Avengers and all that?
I do. Yeah, it's great.
Okay. All right. Me too. I'm a big fan of it. And did you hear about the new Hulk movie that's coming out?
No, but I love the Hulk.
Well, I just saw one of the advertisements, but it was just a giant banner.
Okay. You almost got me on that one. Oh, that was – yeah, that's taking some self-control. That one's the best by far.
All right. Well, you won this one, Jay. Thank you so much for being on the show. I hope you had a good time with it. And I think this is some great information you shared with us.
Thank you for having me. I really, really enjoyed participating in this. Love the podcast. Keep it going. And looking forward to hearing who we talk to next.
This is Kurt Clyden, and I thank you for tuning in to another episode of 3 for 3. If you're not listening to the podcast through an app on your mobile phone, head over to the podcast app on your iPhone or to the Google Play app for Androids. Click on the search tool in the app, type in 3 for 3, that's the number 3, F-O-R, and then the number 3 again, and then subscribe so you can get every episode automatically. We have some great episodes coming up, so I hope you join us for more. See you next time.
3 for 3 is produced by the marketing gurus at Clyden & Associates in Akron, Ohio. Clyden & Associates is a full-service marketing communications agency that has been in business since 1975. For more information about the company, please visit Clyden.com, that's K-L-E-I-D-O-N.com, or call 330-666-5984. If you're interested in being a guest on the show or sponsoring a show, please email Kurt, that's Kurt with a K, at Clydon.com. Until next episode, keep building a great business, and always, always keep laughing.